You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education Issue Review podcast for the edition covering the 17th to the 23rd of September 2015. My name's Chris Parr. I'm joined by books editor Karen Shook, writer Matthew Rice and deputy news editor John Morgan. Leszek Boryshevich, the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Cambridge, has been speaking to John Morgan about tuition fees, TEF and why he hates Oxbridge. Slightly misleading that, but you'll find out why in just a second. Matthew Rice, in another interview piece this week, has been speaking to Mark Edmondson, University Professor of English at the University of Virginia, about his latest book, Self and Soul, which pits the idealism of Homer and Plato against the pragmatism of Shakespeare and Freud. That leads us nicely on, I guess, to this week's book section, which is why Karen Shook is here to take us through that. But first, the lead news story this week, John, it's one of your pieces. You've sat down with Sir Leszek Boryshevich to talk about all things higher education with the current Vice-Chancellor of Cambridge. What did he tell you?
So the main thing to come out of the interview is that Cambridge is not lobbying for fees to go higher than £9,000. Boris, as I'm going to call the Cambridge Vice-Chancellor, told me that from Cambridge's point of view, they're able to sustain the real cost of educating its undergraduates, which he said is £16,700 per year on the current £9,000 fee, based on the performance of their investments. And so I asked him whether, so it's right to say that Cambridge is not lobbying the government for higher fees, and he said we're not lobbying the government in relationship to fees at all, other than making the same statement that we've always made, that we're always concerned about increases in fees because of the problems that it would cause to individual students or their desire to access higher education, and saying that's an essential part of a forward-looking economy for the future.
The reason that's
surprising, perhaps to some, is because his counterpart at the University of Oxford, Andrew Hamilton, has previously called for the government to allow significantly variable fees, to allow fees to rise to more closely reflect the real cost of undergraduate education, which Professor Hamilton put at £16,000 at Oxford. So there's a real contrast between the stances of Oxford and Cambridge there.
And it's sort of inevitable, isn't it, that we group Oxford and Cambridge together? It's happened for a long, long time. The oldest institutions, arguably the most prestigious institutions in the UK. But Boris, as you call him, isn't a fan. He thinks the term Oxbridge is somewhat misleading, and he was quite strong when you used the word while interviewing him.
That's right. I asked him if he gets frustrated by endless Oxbridge access stories in the national press, and he said just touched in one word, his biggest frustration with the way the media coverage is, and it's the awful word Oxbridge. It's complete mythology. And he went on to argue that they're distinctive organisations with their own strategies and directions. And indeed, you will be able to see that in their differing stances on fees. So to that extent, that would bear out his argument.
Did he answer the access bit?
he said they can answer access stories more than adequately when they're specific to us. And just going on further on what he said about fees, he said that even the idea of an inflationary rise arising from the TEF, from the Teaching Excellence Framework, was a contentious issue. Outlined some concerns about the TEF in terms of he would not want it to produce uniformity across teaching, and he said he'd usually like to pilot, as a scientist, he'd like to pilot things before you draw conclusions. He emphasised that balance of contribution between students and the state needs to be a political one, and he'd be concerned about the TEF if it started skewing that particular equation.
Indeed. Well, touched on politics there. You are, of course, our politics correspondent as well. It's been a busy week, to say the least. Corbyn, the new Labour leader, making most of the front pages. We, of course, have covered Corbyn from an HE angle this week. His sort of plans, sort of getting cheers and jeers, depending who you speak to.
Jeremy Corbyn's policy, or planned policy, to abolish tuition fees and reintroduce maintenance grants, a cost of £10 million a year, was a really central part of his successful campaign, and brought a lot of young people and students over to his cause. So that's his in that sense his win is has potentially significant implications for higher education. Nick Hillman, director of the Higher Education Policy Institute and a former Conservative candidate, perhaps not convinced by the case that Corbyn's making. He called sort of Corbyn a gamble for the Labour Party, but also a gamble for higher education, because scrapping fees would mean reintroducing student number controls and potentially a hit on research funding, Nick Hillman argued.
Worth mentioning, of course, Hillman was advisor to David Willetts at the time.
Well, I'd already mentioned he's a former Conservative parliamentary candidate. But on the other side of the political equation, the National Campaign Against Fees and Cuts said it was great to see a Labour leader elected who believes in free education and progressive taxation. The higher education sector will no longer be able to dismiss these ideas as unimportant and unrepresentative. So we'll see what kind of a hearing Corbyn's fees policy gets when he does outline that, and whether that helps him be taken seriously as a leader of the opposition.
Indeed. Well, you can read all those stories on page 6 and 7 in this week's magazine, and of course at timeshighereducation.co.uk. Our cover feature this week looks at academic summer holidays. What did you do on your summer holiday? We've got scholars telling their tales. I'll leave you to find them yourself. You can also follow it on Twitter using the hashtag HEHoliday if you want to get involved. But our second feature, Matthew, is one written by you, and you've been interviewing Mark Edmondson from the University of Virginia.
Yes. Well, he's a very lively and wide-ranging cultural critic, and in one of his recent books he said that universities have become sites not for human transformation but for training and for entertaining. And his new book, Self and Soul, looks at the great ideals that people have lived by in the past. And he says, you know, there's the idea of the warrior, which you get in Homer, the idea of religious compassion, Jesus, most obvious, also the Buddha and so on. And there's also the ideal of deep philosophical thinking, trying to find universal truths for all time, which Plato's the obvious exemplar. And he has run a course and now written a book where he wants to expose his students to these great ideals, these great traditions of ideals, and also expose them to some of the criticisms that they've come up with, that people have come up with against them. And his great enemies of these ideals, he brings forward are Freud and Shakespeare, for reasons which are rather too complicated to go into. So he says that he wants his students to be confronted by these real choices. These are the things that people in the past, to some extent, decided to live their lives by or not. And so if they decide to become a merchant banker, it's on the basis of having thought about these alternative ideals. And if they decide to become a peace worker or a charity worker, it's on the basis that they've, you know, thought about why the life of compassion has their problems with this, and it might not make you happy, or it might be counterproductive. So he's really what he's against is the kind of study that you get in a lot of literature departments, what are known as readings. You take a sort of theoretical toolkit and you apply it. So you use Marxist vocabulary to analyse a poem by William Blake. And he said, this isn't interesting. What you want to do is look at Blake, or indeed look at Marx, and say, you know, is what they're saying true, and does it actually provide me with anything I might want to live by? So he's calling for a very much more serious kind of engagement in the humanities with the great ideals of the past and the great critics of these ideals.
It's clearly an interview that you enjoyed doing. It prompted you to write a blog for us as well called In Praise of Scholarly Interviews, or words to that effect. You'll find it on our blog section. And in that blog you sort of detailed some of the fun that you've had interviewing scholars down the years.
Yeah, I think people should read the blog, but I want to say something else, that this piece interview has been illustrated with some great pictures. One, Shakespeare and Plato in getting scrapping in a boxing match, in terms of fisticuffs, and Freud training in the gym for the big fight. So I think it fits in quite nicely with Mark Edmondson's arguments, and certainly they're quite entertaining pictures.
Very good. Well, page 40 for that in the magazine. Click the features tab on the homepage if you'd rather read it online. Karen, we're talking books. Let's move on to this week's book section. What do you have in store?
Well, in the academic world of publishing, as in the trade world, it's the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter says Christmas sales. Christmas sales says Nazis and other bad people.
nothing says Christmas
like a good book on Nazis. And this week, Robert Bellatoli, the eminent historian of Nazi Germany and of Stalinist Russia, is reviewing Ian Kershaw's new book, To Hell and Back, Europe 1914 to 1949. So arguably Kershaw trading on the patch of the First World War scholars, traditionally known as the Second World War scholar. I'm not sure whether that has provoked some grumbles, but Robert Galatoli gives his assessment of why the fact that Kershaw is a lifelong German history scholar maybe has a different perspective on these issues than, say, someone who was a Soviet studies scholar. It's kind of Bloods and Crips thing, I think.
Yeah.
Emma Rees reviews The Feminism of Uncertainty by the noted literary scholar Anne Snitto at the New School in New York. That's a collection of 35 years worth of writing. John Gilby takes on The Master Algorithm, How the Quest for the Ultimate Learning Machine Will Remake Our World. So big data, be very scared. And a fantastic trope of literary reviewing. John notes that it's only at the end of the book where privacy of information pops up, as we're talking about the data singularity. That's right. And I've learned over the years to decipher academic speak. John Gilby concludes with, "This is an area I would very much like to see expanded on in future work," which is code, as you know, for where the heck is it? Why didn't you write about it? Also this week, I have a doctoral candidate reviewing a book. We don't often do that, but it's a good opportunity. Gemma Edney from the University of Exeter is reviewing a book by Mary Harrod called From France with Love, Gender and Identity in French Romantic Comedy. If you ever loved Amélie, or if you didn't, you would like to read this book, I think. Peter Smith takes on a book on Samuel Pepys and his books and the fact that Samuel Pepys, rather than writing one book, collected thousands and arguably gave more to history than he would have done if he'd written one book. And Peter can't resist ending with a little comment about Pepys writing in his diary about the naughty books he was reading, just for research, of course. Also this week, David Healy, the noted psychiatry academic, takes on a fantastic book called Good Pharma, which is about the Mario Negri Institute in Italy, which redefined looking at medical research outside the ambit of the major pharmaceutical companies. And in fact, David Healy says that there are probably very few families anywhere whose health hasn't benefited from the Institute's discoveries or from its resistance to industry or political efforts to cut corners. Also this week in What Are You Reading, which is our weekly column where I rope in five people to tell me what they're reading, talking about approaching the singularity, I've got Sir David Bell, the Vice-Chancellor, writing about Sir David Bell, the Vice-Chancellor, the other one. So that's Sir David Bell at Reading, writing about a book by an eminent historian who also happens to be Sir David Eastwood, who is the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Birmingham. If there are any other Sir Davids out there who are Vice-Chancellors or who have written books and would like to write about each other, I'm willing to offer you space. Please contact me.
The Sir David special coming in.
I'm hoping to get five. I've got the two, so just a couple more. Also this week, Vicky Duckworth writes about Emily Dugan's book, Finding Home, Real Stories of Migrant Britain, a fantastic book, she says, collections of accounts of people struggling to settle in the UK. And finally, our book of the week this week, Joanna Bryson, reader in artificial intelligence at the University of Bath, takes on the latest book from Guy Claxton, Intelligence in the Flesh, Why Your Mind Needs Your Body Much More Than It Thinks. So this is embodied intelligence. Any of you who are still clinging to Cartesian dualism need to read this book. It's brilliantly written. It's a great read. His previous several books, Hair Brain, Tortoise Mind, or perhaps it was Hair Mind, Tortoise Brain. I'm afraid my mind's a bit fuzzy on that. Have all attracted a lot of praise. And not only is he an acclaimed author, but he also co-founded the University of Winchester's Center for Real World Learning. And I asked him why found a center, what can you do there that you couldn't do in an endowed chair at any university? And he said, avoid the drudgery of committee meetings and administration and have a lot of fun with my collaborator, Bill Lucas. It's worth checking out.
Thank you, Karen. Fantastic. Before we go, I should flag up we're getting closer to the launch of the 2015-16 World University Rankings. That will be 9 p.m. UK time on the 30th of September. That's all for this week's issue review. If you want to comment on anything we've discussed, you can do so via the website. You'll find us on Twitter and Facebook. You'll find us on LinkedIn and Google+. Please do get in touch. But that's all for this week's THE Issue Review podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.